Good. Shalom Aleichem, everybody hears me?
We can hear
Yeah?
you.
Okay, great. I'm not sure if we should start yet. If we're supposed to wait for Rabbi Orlan, is Rabbi Orlan going to be on?
He usually is, so let's give it a
Wait.
minute.
Okay, we'll wait. I'm just going to try to share my screen first. Hold on one second. Okay, it's not letting me share the screen. I'm texting with Rabbi early on just to see.
Hi, Rabbi Krohn.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you
Good.
have the capability to share?
No, it says I press share screen and it says host disabled participant screen sharing.
Hold on. Only hosts can share in this meeting. Could you check with Rabbi Siegelman? We did this on Friday and I somehow used that host key to enable enter host key. Oh, do you have a thing that says sign in as host or enter host key to claim host?
I don't think so. I don't see it.
On more, is there an option for more? I have a button that says I'm on the phone, obviously.
There,
But on,
if you open participants in the bottom,
if you go to participants and click in
wow.
on your name, it might say
Okay.
sign in as host or enter host key to claim
Caller.
host.
Okay. Now that rename. Claim host.
Yeah, try to claim
Enter host
host.
key. I'll give that. I'll put in the key that you gave me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, your host.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you. First of all, welcome everybody. Welcome, Rabbi Krohn. Thank you so much for joining us from Passaic. And Rabbi Krohn is a. Oh, there we go. Rabbi Krohn is of course, a Mohel, following the family tradition. Besides that, Rabbi Krohn is one of the Rabbanim for Pua, which we know, as you all learned on Friday, helps many families, especially in the United States and in America as well, and around the world in infertility issues. And Rabbi Krohn will be speaking, following up on Rabbi Siegelman's presentation on Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Krohn will be speaking about male infertility. And B'chavad Rav, Rabbi Krohn. Now, Rabbi Krohn, I would just suggest that you turn off the recording on the bottom and then start it again right away so that the recording will be just your presentation without this gap of 3, 4 minutes.
Okay. How do I do that?
On the bottom, there should be a button that says recording on the bottom of the screen that says pause recording or stop recording.
See? I'm technologically challenged, so it doesn't have the because I just have the screen, the shared screen in front of me.
Okay, go ahead. Terrific. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
B'chavad Rav, Rabbi Krohn.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Orlan. It is a tremendous schus to be able to be here once again. We were able to spend time together a year ago with another group of young Talmid Chachamim, and it's an honor to be here on behalf of Pua. As Rabbi Siegelman already probably told you, that here at Pua, we're Zeicha, we have the great schus to help couples and older singles and older men I was on the phone with today, guiding them in halacha, and we provide supervision and medical advice in regards to anyone's fertility journey. And what I'd like to do today is, since you're all studying for Smicha and Mitzvah Shem, you're going to be Rabbanim going forward in the near future, you're going to come across a lot of questions that come up in regards to fertility with couples in your community. So we're going to go through just some of the medical facts, the halacha questions that Rabbanim deal with on a day-to-day basis. And as mentioned, we're going to focus on male infertility. I was really supposed to be with you on Thursday at 5 o'clock, but there was a big storm here in Passaic and I had no electricity till late at night. So we were able to, Baruch Hashem, rearrange. So I'm able to be with you today. And anyone who has any questions throughout, feel free to chime in and to call out any questions along the way. So, let me see. Hold on 1 second. I'm just trying to hold on. It's not letting me slideshow. Hold on. Okay. So Rabbi Siegelman probably shared with you some of the statistics given to those that struggle in infertility. They'll say in some places it's 1 in 7 couples struggle with infertility. In some places they'll say 1 in 6, 1 in 8. But certainly, clearly, it's more common than people think. That's one thing that it's important to know, that it is something that is common and does come up. And when a couple speaks to you and they feel like they're all alone on an island and they're the only one who are struggling, so it's important to know that, to tell them they are not the only one struggling. There are many people, unfortunately, struggling with infertility. I myself did not believe some of these numbers, but then as you take phone calls again and again and again, you'll see that there are the different levels people that struggle with infertility. It's important to know that it's out there and there is help. There is medical help and there is halacha help to guide people. But, you know, we deal with this every single day. As a Rav, you're not going to deal with it every single day, but it's important. It's important to know some of the basics of the questions that come up. So what we're going to discuss today is, first we're going to discuss the medical issues. As you could see, I'm assuming you all see the screen changing in front of you, the medical issues, and then the halacha. For the medical, we'll start with the problems with the sperm itself, since we're focusing on male infertility. Number two is problems with intercourse, with tashmish. Number three, we'll discuss other medical issues that could affect the fertility. Number four, the treatments of these issues. Of course, we're not doctors. I'm certainly not a doctor, but we'll go through some of the treatments of these issues. And then we'll get to the halacha, when to start investigating into such issues. Number two, is a semen analysis permitted? Number three, which is very important, how to do a semen analysis. I'm on the phone with people about this day after day after day. What's the best way in halacha to do semen analysis? Number four, briefly, we'll talk about suadaka and kroshafa. Those are sugyas and yavamis that some of you might be familiar with. Number five is to discuss a little bit about sperm donation. A man who has no sperm, can they take a sperm donor from an outside source? And number six, we'll see how this affects shaduchim. What is a person allowed to say in regards to shaduchim? When should they say it in regards to shaduchim? We'll go through step by step. So we all know that when a couple gets married, so a man is obligated in the mitzvah of pru revu in order to have a child. We paskin that women are not obligated in pru revu, but a man is obligated, whether he likes it or not, he has a chiyuv in order to try to have children. And we know that it's a machlekes between Beisilel and Bishanai. We paskin like Beisilel that they fulfill the mitzvah with one boy and one girl. Good. That's the background. That's, you know, the simple understanding. Everybody wants to have children. We're supposed to have a boy and a girl. So the main issue is the following. One of the main issues: when a man and woman have tashmish, when they have intercourse, so just the basics that a lot of people don't realize. So a man ejaculates semen. He ejaculates semen and he has a certain amount of semen, and in, it's called the ejaculate, and in that ejaculate, in the semen, there is what's called sperm. A typical ejaculate has hundreds of millions of sperm. A healthy man, every time he has relations with his wife, anytime he has tashmish, so the semen comes out microscopically in semen, there's hundreds of millions of sperm. That sperm was created by a hormone called testosterone, and it's created in the testicles. It travels through the reproductive organs and into the woman. And it's important to realize that there's a big difference between men and women. A man is constantly making more sperm. It starts at puberty around the age of 11, 12, 13, 14, and continues for many, many years. And a healthy man, I was talking to a man today, an older single, and Hashem will send him the right shidduch very soon. But I told him, a man continues to make sperm, a healthy man makes sperm 20, 30, 40, 50, over the age of 50, perhaps up to the age of 60. He's constantly creating more and more sperm all the time, healthy sperm day after day. Rabbi Siegelman probably told you that by a woman, it's not like that. A woman has eggs. A woman is born, a female is born with a certain number of eggs, and they're born with all the eggs that they're going to have the entire life. It just gets less and less and less. She'll never get more eggs. It gets less and less and less as time goes on. And all you need is one sperm and one egg to create a baby. That's all you need. It's really like Chazal say, Adam Nivra Yechidi. So in a regular act of Tashmish, so there's hundreds of millions of sperm and one egg. And it's just a matter of one sperm connecting with that egg through the core, through the intercourse, through the Tashmish. So hundreds of millions of sperms, and a sperm and one egg. The problem is that sometimes it doesn't result in a pregnancy. And it's very upsetting. And again and again and again, they have Tashmish month after month after month. And we don't know. We don't know. The couple doesn't know why it's not resulting in a pregnancy. And number one is that a Rav needs to know that you have to validate their feelings. You have to tell them, I'm so sorry for your situation. It must be really tough. It must be difficult. And it's very hard because they don't know. They don't know what the problem is. Why is it not happening? So different statistics will give you different numbers. It could be that Rabbi Siegelman shared with you a little bit of different numbers. It used to be assumed that it always was a female problem. It always was a problem with the eggs, a problem with the ovaries, with the uterus, something to do with the woman. But we know that that's really, really not the case. Sometimes they'll say it's 33% the woman, 33% because of the male, and 33% unexplained. Over here, you'll see this chart in front of you, different numbers, 30%, 30%, and then unexplained is 25%, combined is 10%. It really doesn't make a difference, the exact numbers, because anything is possible. It's possible it's from the woman. It's possible it's from the man. And it's possible that it's unexplained. So we're going to focus today on the man. What could be the problems with sperm when it comes to not creating a baby? So number one is what's called oligospermia, which means at a very low sperm count. You look at these two circles in front of you. So on the top, there's a normal sperm count, which like we said before, hundreds of millions of sperm are inside a typical ejaculate. But problem number one that could happen with an individual is that there's a low sperm count. Look, there's not so many sperm over there. It's much, much fewer sperm than what's supposed to be of a typical ejaculate. When there's much fewer sperm, so you don't need to be a math major to realize that there's less of a chance that that's going to create a baby. It's not impossible. It's not impossible. All you need is one sperm. But when there's much fewer sperm, the chances of one of the sperm connecting with the eggs is obviously much lower. There's something that is called Klinefelter. You'll see on the right, the Klinefelter syndrome. On the left is Turner syndrome. That's in regards to a female. I'm assuming Rabbi Siegelman spoke to you about Turner syndrome. But Klinefelter syndrome is in regards to a man. And you'll see it says over there, 47 XXY. And what that is all about is that a individual has 23 pairs of chromosomes, 23 pairs equals 46. A man that has what's called Klinefelter has 23 pairs, but in the last pair, a man is supposed to have XY, and a woman is supposed to have XX, and someone who has Klinefelter has XXY. So he's clearly a man because he has the Y, but he has an extra X. He's got 47 instead of 46. And this happens in approximately 1,000 men, perhaps even less than that, 1 in 750 men. But because they have an extra X chromosome, it's almost as if they're like a shtickle of a woman. They're like a little bit of a woman, and they don't have sperm. There are some men that have zero. Unfortunately, they have zero sperm. They're not able to, they don't have any sperm. And again, we'll talk about sperm donor later, but a person could have a low sperm count, or so much so that they could have zero sperm. Someone with Klinefelter has mamish, has no sperm. And that's the first problem that could be with an individual sperm, a low sperm count, and perhaps even zero. A second problem that could be with a man's sperm is the motility. Motility means the way it travels, which means like this. Proportionately, the sperm has to travel so many miles. I Googled one time and I saw that for us to travel from Chicago to Hawaii, that's very far. If I would travel from Chicago to Hawaii, proportionally, how tiny the sperm is, that it has to reach all the way into the uterus and connect with an egg, proportionately, that's like traveling from Chicago to Honolulu. So there are to Hawaii. So there are sperm, it's very healthy, and there's a lot of sperm, but it doesn't travel. For whatever reason, it doesn't travel well, and it won't reach the egg. That's what's called asthenospermia. And there's actually an amazing theory that I'm sure some of you have heard of the following Gemara. Ever heard of the Gemara that says that if a man is Mazras Tchila, then the child is going to be a girl. But if the woman is Mazras Tchila, then it's going to be a boy. And it's not clear 100% what does that mean. Whoever is Mazras Tchila, what does that mean to be Mazras Tchila? Whoever is Mazras first is going to be the opposite. So there is a theory of the following. And this could explain perhaps the Gemara. There's a theory that every sperm, right, is either X or Y. X means female, and Y is the male. So the male sperm, the Y sperm, is much stronger. It goes faster and it's stronger, but it has less stamina. It's not going to last very long. It'll die out very quickly. Whereas by a female sperm, by the X sperm, it's the exact opposite. It's not very strong, not very fast, but it has a lot of stamina, and it's going to last for several days. And it's funny because in real life, that's the way also. Men are stronger than women, but a man plotzes, you know, that's it, he's gone, he falls apart after very quickly. A woman, she's not so strong, but she could go for days and days and days. She has a lot of stamina and a lot of energy as far as that. So the motility of the male sperm is much faster, but it's going to die out much quicker. So some say that that could be chat in the Gemara as well. Now we know that a woman ovulates. Obviously, you discussed that with Rabbi Siegelman, that when a woman ovulates, that's when she's able to become pregnant. And that's what the Gemara means by mazras. So that means the following, that if a man and a woman have tashmish, right at the time that they, right at the time that she's ovulating, so she's ovulating first. She's tchila. She's going to be ovulating first. And then which sperm is going to win? The male sperm is going to win because that's much stronger. So it's going to be a male because she was Mazras Tchila. She ovulated first. But if she ovulates a couple of days after Tashmish, so the male sperm is going to die out after a couple of days. But the female sperm, that's going to last much longer because that has stamina. So if he is Mazras Tchila, she doesn't ovulate till much later. He's first. So then it's going to be a female. That's an interesting way to explain the Gemara, but basically that's the second problem that could happen with a male sperm, that the motility, it doesn't travel very well. It doesn't last. It travels a few miles, but it doesn't travel. It doesn't reach all the way to the egg. I was just speaking to a woman a couple of days ago, and they're struggling to have children. And they took a semen analysis, and they realized that her husband doesn't have good motility. She shared her charts with me that we'll see later. And the motility, there isn't motility for her husband's sperm. So we'll talk about how to treat such a thing. But that's a second problem, the motility. Number three is the morphology. You could see over here by these pictures of the sperm that each one of these sperms has something wrong. All the way to the left, it says normal. So that's a normal sperm. It's got a good head. It has a good middle. It's got a good tail. But all the other ones, they're strange. The next one, the head is too big. The next one, the head is too small. The next one is a double head. It's a double body. When there's a double body, a long head, a rough head, an abnormal middle piece, could be all different types of problems that sperm itself is not healthy sperm. Now, you can't see this without a microscope, but the doctor will be able to look at the sperm and he'll see that the morphology, there's something wrong. That's what's called teratospermia. There's other pictures over here. You'll see normal sperm, but then there's a pinhead, it's immature, and a giant head, a double tail, all different types of problems in the sperm. But that's a third problem, that the morphology is not good. And then here is the results. A man will take a semen analysis, he'll take a sperm analysis, and he'll see there's different numbers. You'll see on the left, there's the volume, it's supposed to be a certain amount, and then there's the motility. You can see the total motility, the total sperm count as you go lower down. The morphology is only 2%, and you'll look on the right, it's supposed to be 15%. The morphology is only 2%. And different problems that could happen. These results here are really not good. The volume is not good. The motility is not good. The sperm count is not good. The morphology is not good. This person really does not have good sperm. But those are the problems, the medical problems that could be with the sperm that a person needs to check out. So that's number one. Number one was the problems with the sperm, and there's basically three or four problems. Number one is the amount of semen. We skipped that. But number one was the amount of sperm, the number of sperm. Number two was the motility, and number three was the morphology. Number two is problems with tashmish, problems with intercourse. And that, in general, is a very sensitive topic to talk about. And you'll have to discuss this with the couple. It could happen that the man is not producing an ejaculate whatsoever. Nothing comes out. I was on the phone with a woman a couple of months ago, and I don't know, I was just on the phone with the woman the whole time. The husband didn't want to talk to me. Maybe he was embarrassed. I don't know. But I was on the phone with her the whole time. Nothing came out. And they were together, and nothing came out. And sometimes it could be something physical. Sometimes it could be something psychological. You know, sometimes you'll have a very yeshivish bachur who was secluded his whole life. He grew up in a neighborhood, whether it's Williamsburg, Kiryas Yoel, and he wasn't exposed to anything. And there is good things about that. But then when he comes to the bedroom and he's married, so then sometimes they don't know exactly what to do, and they weren't taught properly, and it comes from a good place. But sometimes you just have to find out what the problem is. A lot of times they'll come to a doctor, and the doctor right away starts dealing with the numbers, and they'll go to tests and analysis. Sometimes it's just you have to discuss with them. Do they know exactly what is the process of tashmish? And sometimes it's psychological. Maybe they had abuse. Maybe they had trauma as a child. And a lot of times they have to go to therapists. There are therapists that deal with this. And I sent that couple to a therapist, and I hope, you know, I still have to be in touch with them, hoping that that's going to improve. But there could be physical problems, and there could be psychological problems. There's something that's called premature ejaculation, which means that, and I had this not that long ago, that I was on the phone with somebody, and he was married for 10 years, and he had premature ejaculation, which means that he was together with his wife, and just automatically he was able to ejaculate before he even got a chance to be together with his wife, to go inside, and he can't have a child like that. And he pushed it off for many, many years. He was married 10 years until he finally built up the courage to reach out to us. So I sent him to the proper therapist, to the proper doctors, and Bez Hashem, he'll be able to see results. Another issue is, and it could be Rabbi Siegelman mentioned this to you, and we alluded to this before, I've been on the phone with couples. They don't know that they have to be together when the woman ovulates. You know, they're together when she comes back from the mikvah, and if that doesn't result in a baby, so there could be couples that have a lot of shalom bias, everything is fine in the marriage, but they're tired, or they're busy, and they don't necessarily make sure to be together at the time of ovulation, and then they wait another week, but have to be together again and again. Sometimes you take for granted that people realize certain things, and they don't. They don't even know these basic facts. And again, a lot of times it comes from a good place. Men, women, they don't necessarily know, but there are issues that could come up in regards to Tashmish that people really need to know. Number three is other medical issues that could affect fertility. And number one, we spoke about the sperm, and we spoke about the intercourse of Tashmish. But then there's other medical issues that could really, really have an effect. There is something that's called a varicocele. This is very important. And there are many men that have a varicocele. Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes they don't even realize that they have a varicocele. And as you can see from the picture, I apologize about the pictures, but it's important to be able to visualize it. And a varicocele means the veins leading to the testicles where the sperm is created, the veins are swollen. And if the veins are swollen, the veins in the scrotum, they get enlarged. And usually it's the left one. We're not 100% sure why this is the case, but usually when a man has a varicocele, it's the left testicle that has a varicocele, but it could be the right one as well. And this affects the temperature in the scrotum. It could be that it becomes too hot because the cooling system is blocked. It's amazing how Hashem created the human body. That the sperm has to be at the proper temperature. Inside the body, it's going to be too hot. And outside the body, it's going to be too cold. So Hashem makes it that the testicles are in the scrotum, which are inside the body, but not completely inside the body. It's in a sac by itself. So it's right at the proper temperature. If somebody who has a varicocele, it's going to affect the temperature in the testicles, and they're not going to have the proper temperature. What needs to be done a lot of times, it needs to be removed. And it's not such a major procedure to be removed. The person does not need to stay overnight. It's like an outpatient type of thing. And sometimes they could fix the varicocele even without removing those veins. They could make sperm go a different route and able to avoid those veins. But that is something that's possible. You could ask the man, you have pain over there by your testicles, and say, well, actually, yeah, what does that have to do with anything? So if the person has pain, that might very well be an indication that he has a varicocele. Another issue, and as Rabbi Orlan mentioned, I have the schus of being a male, like my father. So this is something that we witness a lot of times when you open up the diaper and you check the baby. So a lot of times there's undescended testicles, that the testicles are not in the scrotum and they remain above the testicles. They're not fully developed. And if they remain above, they can't produce sperm. Now, by a baby, it's not a big deal because most of the time it descends by itself. Before the baby is 3 months old, it'll descend. And certainly by the time the child is a year old, but if you have an adult that the testicles have not descended, so that certainly is an indication that something is wrong with the testicles. And once again, the temperature could be an issue. That needs to be taken care of. It might be able to be lowered through a procedure. Another issue, Rahman al-Itzlan, is if a person has cancer treatment. Unfortunately, I've been on the phone many times with people, men and women, but certainly men, that have gone through cancer treatment, and that very, very much affects the sperm. And a person goes through chemotherapy that could kill the sperm or it could kill the eggs, and a person really needs to do fertility preservation before that. We have to discuss, how does a bachur do fertility preservation in the proper way. What a person needs to do fertility preservation, take sperm out and freeze it, and then they have it frozen for many years to come. But if a person had cancer treatment, so that is going to affect sperm very, very much. Another issue, a medical issue that could be, is what's called cystic fibrosis. To have a person that's a cystic fibrosis carrier, even if they don't have cystic fibrosis itself, but the fact that they're a carrier for it, you could see from the picture that the way healthy reproductive organs looks one way, but when a person is a cystic fibrosis carrier, so there's increased mucus secretion over there and it's blocked, and sperm could be 100% healthy, but it can't go anywhere. It's blocked and it won't be able to get through. There's no vas deferens, or the vas deferens is blocked, and that could be blocked, and therefore the sperm can't get through. So those are other medical issues that we deal with. The undescended testicles, the truth is, I don't deal with very, very often, except as a male. The cancer treatment, unfortunately, we do deal with that. Vas deferens, not as much, but the varicocele is for sure. Of those four, that's the most common. A varicocele is pretty common. I don't have written down in front of me how common it is. Maybe I have written it somewhere else. But one thing is important, that a varicocele is the most common cause of male infertility by secondary infertility. By secondary infertility, which means that a man has a child, but then he's struggling to have a second child. So the most common problem in that case is a varicocele, because that's something that could happen later in life. For whatever reason, later in life, the veins become swollen. So that, from cases of secondary infertility, varicocele is the most common. But Rahman al-Atlan, these things sometimes need to be addressed. Next is the last part for the medical issues, and then we'll get to the halacha, is the treatments. What are the treatments of these issues? What does a person do in order to solve some of these problems? So number one is the following. Really, before this, is that, how do we check when a husband and a wife, they're not having kids, so they want to check the sperm. The woman takes all her tests with the eggs that Rabbi Siegelman discussed with you. You want to check out the sperm. So the simplest thing to do is a semen analysis. And we have to talk about what are the methods of doing a semen analysis in halacha. But let's say the semen analysis doesn't work, or they can't get such a good reading on it, or they want to be a little bit more aggressive. So then what they do is, you can see the picture that they take from the testicle, and there's what's called a tefna. Tefna stands for testicle fine needle aspiration. They take a needle. Obviously, there is there's anesthesia over there, and you stick a needle into the testicle and you extract sperm like that. And you test the sperm. You look at the sperm. You're able to take the sperm out in such a manner, and you take the sperm out, and this way you could do an analysis. You could check it. Another thing that you would do with the sperm is to actually use it. You take the sperm out and use it for an IUI or IVF. I'm assuming Rabbi Siegelman discussed that with you, but just to make sure, an IUI means that you take the sperm from the husband and you shoot it up into the woman. You send it up into her. You could take the sperm like that. That's an IUI, intrauterine insemination. And IVF is very different. IVF is you take the sperm from the man, you take the eggs out, the retrieval from the woman, and you try to take the sperm and the egg and create a baby in a dish. It's called ICSI. ICSI is that you take the sperm and you put it into the egg. So that's also what you could do this for. You take the sperm out from the testicle directly, either to test it or to use it for an actual IUI or an IVF. But that's one way. A second thing is what's called, the second procedure is what's called the TESI, a testicular biopsy, testicular sperm extraction. And you take a tissue sample from the testicle for either an analysis or to use the sperm for the IVF. They take a little bit. You could see that tiny, tiny piece. Let's say in a healthy individual, there could be millions of sperm just in that tiny piece. Usually we don't do this by a healthy person necessarily. We do this by somebody that is missing a lot of sperm. And that, you take that out, that's what's called a TESI. Another option is what's called micro TESI. we're not doctors and we don't need to know the exact differences between these, but in microtussy is they actually open up the testicle and they take cells that look healthy. They take a look at it and they see these ones are healthy, these ones are not, and they take it out, and they can get a much better view. And I'll tell you, just as we end off, you know, the medical part of it, Tisha B'Av is this Sunday. Last year Tisha B'Av, there was a man who was having a testicular biopsy, one of these procedures, and he needed to have supervision. He needed to have hashkacha to make sure that it's not switched for somebody else's. So obviously, you can't have a mashkicha, you can't have a woman be there. Even though we have over 100 women mashkichot throughout America and Canada, but this was a man that needed a procedure. Rabbi Siegelman was not available to go. It was about 2 hours from Passaic, about also 2 hours from Queens, where Rabbi Siegelman lives, and Rabbi Siegelman wasn't available. So I was the only other option. We don't have men mashkichim. And I asked Rabbi Sachs, I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with Rabbi Sachs. He's my Rav in Passaic. And I asked Rabbi Sachs, I said, this is Tisha B'Av. Do I need to go and be a mashkiach for a testicular biopsy on Tisha B'Av? I want to come to shul. I wanted to say kinnus. And Rabbi Sachs said to me, can Rabbi Siegelman go? I said, Rabbi Siegelman is not available. He said, you have to go. This is what you need to do. And I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, last Tisha B'Av. I drove. I arrived there at around 6 o'clock. I was inside the hospital by 6 o'clock. Of course, this is in my slippers and this is, you know, fasting. The procedure started around 6:30, 6:45. I was back in the car. I was, you know, finished daven. I was back in the car by 9. I was back in my house by 11 o'clock and I said kinnis by myself. But, you know, these things take place. They're real procedures that need to be done many times. And that's the medical options when somebody has problems with the sperm. So that's the medical part of it, the problems with the sperm, the problems with tashmish, other medical issues that affect fertility, and the treatments of these issues. What's important, very important for Rav, is the halacha aspect. So we're going to start with when to start investigating. At what point a couple gets married and, you know, right away, I had it today several times. The first thing out of the mouth is, I'm married 1 year, I'm married 3 years, I'm married 5 years. So they tell you how long they've been married. And the question is, what does halacha say? After how long does a couple have the right to go start doing tests and looking into things? So, and when is it advisable to start investigating? So the Minchas Yitzchak, they bring, they see in brackets, it says 10 years. So the Minchas Yitzchak says, very strict, amazing, that a couple can't start doing research until they're married for 10 years. Rav Moshe Feinstein says less than that. Rav Moshe Feinstein says 5 years is enough. You'll see over here that it brings from the Chazon Ish that a person could start checking out after 2 years of marriage. And the Paiskim tell us, as brought by the Tzitz Eliezer, that it's very possible that the Chazon Ish would have let even earlier than 2 years. That was the question that was presented to him. And they started doing research after 2 years. He said yes, but it could be even less than that. Rav Moshe Sternbuch lets after 1 year, something that's very important that Rabbi Siegelman told me in the name of Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter says that which Rav Moshe Feinstein only lets after 5 years, that's talking about when there's major halachic compromises, talking about using a condom, or if Misha Feinstein is not a fan of, that we're gonna have to talk about. But if you do a semen analysis in ways that there's no problem there's no halachic compromises, which we'll talk about, then Rav Schechter felt that even Rav Misha Feinstein would agree that less than 5 years is not a problem. But generally, it's accepted that after a year or two, a person is allowed to, certainly after a year, that's definitely the minig, that we would start doing research into it. And if a couple calls you and they said, oh, we're married 6 months, we're getting nervous. So you say, listen, 6 months, you know, I think, you know, you don't have to start, you know, running to the doctors, but it's very important. You have to know how old are they. If she's 37 and he's 42 and they're married already 6 months, so you can't say, oh, let's wait another 6 months. Time is of essence. It's very, very important. You know, once they're a little bit older, to be more aggressive and start checking into things. You want to make sure, you have to make sure, you know, even earlier in the game. So it's important to know if they're 19 and, you know, and now she's 20. So, okay, so then you can tell them to wait a little bit longer. But if they're older, then it's important to, you know, to be more aggressive. It's very important is a semen analysis permitted? You know, we've been taking for granted up until now that you're allowed to do a semen analysis. So the husband has the sperm inside of him. He's got to get it to the doctor. Are you allowed? How do you do it? And is a semen analysis permitted or not? And then we have to talk about how to do it. So this is based on a very important Gemara. Sorry. The Gemara says that you read in the middle, the Amar Rabbi Yechon, kol ha-maitzi shichva zera levatala, chayiv misa. Very, very strict. Now the Gemara is telling us that someone who's maitzi zera levatala for absolutely no reason, so it's very, very strict, they're chayiv misa. And we'll see in Shulchan Aruch, asur lahaitzi shichva zera levatala v'avayin zechomer mikol ha-veira shevetera. It's the most strict of all ha-veiras. V'fikach lo'ye adam bashmi b'fnim v'zera mi'bachot. We have to talk about that. Beit Shmuel says that when it says there's chomer mikol ha-veiras, it's lav dafka. It's not exactly that it's the worst avera, but it's definitely, you see how strict it really is, that it's the one that it's a very, very strict avera. You'll see in the Shaila Tshuvos Igros Moshe that he says that it's midaraisa, v'gam chayev misa bidei shamayim, who it's chomer ma'oid, and he goes through the sources. As you can see, you can look it up more at length in Ibn Ezra Chelek Gimel Simon Midbalin, how important it is that a priest, you can't just say, oh, it's for a good purpose. You can't just simply say, oh, it's for a good purpose. A person has to realize that we're dealing with a very, very strict, potentially very, very strict Avera. You'll see that in the Binyan Siyam, which is the Aruch Oner, that Hashchos Zera, he talks about, he refers to himself in the Aruch Oner. He says, Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Amazing that it's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, that that's where it is in the Torah, because they said it's also Midaraisa. Where in the Torah does it say it? So perhaps it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, and perhaps it's an issa d'rabbanon. According to other paiskim, that's Rav Herzog. He says perhaps it's an issa d'rabbanon. But either way, it's certainly very, very strict to the maitzi zera levatala for absolutely no reason. So that's something that a person has to be careful. But definitely the halacha is that you need to know that we do let a first semen analysis in certain situations, but the question is, how? What is the best way? So the source for this is a Gemara in Yevamos. It's very important to have this Gemara clear what exactly the Gemara is talking about and what are the options that the Gemara says. So the Gemara over there is talking about the following. It's talking about where a person had a hole in the testicles, hole in the beitzim. And the Gemara wants to know that if when they have tashmish, the zera is going to go out from the hole, then he's a kurchavcha, and he's not able to marry. He's not allowed to marry lekahal. He's not allowed to marry bechlal. You know the halacha is that a kurchavcha and a psuadaka, they're not able to get married. They're not allowed to marry a firm person. So this person has a hole. They're not allowed to marry a Jew. And certainly not a guy. So this person has a hole in the testicle. How do you check? Is the zera going to go out from the hole or not? They can't get married. So how do they check it out in the first place? So the Gemara says that you'll see in the middle, Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, Heichi Avdina. But we'll start before that. Amar Marukva Amar Shmuel, Nikav Ba'atara. There's a hole in the Atara or in the testicle, Atzma Benistam, Kolchi Ilu Nikri Benikra as Pasal, Bilav Kosher. So if it's going to burst through, then it's possible. So how do you do it? Shalach le Rava braid the Rava le Rav Yosef. Yilamdenu Rabbeinu. Please teach us. Heichi Avdina. How do you check it out? How do you do a semen analysis? So Amalei, Maisina Namo Chamima. You bring hot bread, besari, hot barley bread. Umanchina le Abbe Pokri. And you put it in the back, by his private part in the back. Not on that area, but in the back where he sits down. Umikri, and then that like stimulates him. Umikri, and then he's mitzi the keri, he's mitzi the zera like that. Chazinately, and then you see, does it go out from the hole or not? So that's like very odd. You take barley bread and put it in his back, like Amar Abaya. Atu kuli alma Yaakov Avinu hava d'chsev be koychim reiches zaynish like ra kerem yomav. That's like crazy. You think everybody's like Yaakov Avinu? That Yaakov Avinu was never mighty zera before he was married. So you have to go to such lengths in order to be mighty zera. Nah, there's a much easier way. Ela Amar Abaya mavinu kame big beit zavinu. You bring nice colored clothing in front of him. And once he sees, oh, wow, nice women's clothing, he's going to be mighty zera. And then you check it out. So Amar Rava, Atu Kuliyama Barzila HaGaladihu, is every person Barzila HaGaladi. Rashi explains over there that Barzila HaGaladi was someone who was constantly shot of bezima, and all he had to do was just look at female clothing, and he was able to be mighty zera. So it's not going to work. It's not going to work by everybody, because you see female clothing, you're not going to be mighty zera. Just have to go with the first pshat that you do the barley bread in the back. So says Rav Moshe Feinstein the following. Wait a second. I don't understand. There's much easier way to do it. Just let the man be Moitzi Zera by himself, and he'll do a biyadayim. Normally we wouldn't let this. But for this purpose of seeing whether he's able to marry Lekahal, let him just go into the other room and he'll do it what's called biyadayim, do it with his hands, and not that he would look at any magazines or anything like that, but he'll think of his wife, but he'll just do it biyadayim, he'll do it by himself on his own. Why doesn't the Gemara just say that? So says Rav Meisha, you see that is not an option. That's not an option. Otherwise, why does the Gemara have to start talking about barley bread and all these things? Let him just do it in a simple manner. And you see from here, says Rav Moshe, that is not allowed in halacha. So we'll have to talk about that in a few moments if everybody agrees to this. But that is not allowed according to halacha, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. So what is the best way to do it? What is the best way to do a semen analysis? So the following is the best way in halacha. And I tell this to people all the time, and it's just like standard that I tell this to men, I tell this to women, this is the best way. When a husband and a wife are permitted, we're going to rate the numbers the best way in halacha. Number one is the following. A husband and a wife, at a time when they're permitted to each other, so they're together like regular. She empties herself out, meaning she cleans herself, make sure she's very clean, have tashmish, to have intercourse like regular. And they have prepared in advance, a cup, a sterile cup. This is a sterile cup that we put urine in when we go to the doctor, a sterile cup. And she quickly, right after she has tashmish with her husband, she stands up, she empties herself out to the best of her ability into the cup. And then they bring that cup into the clinic. Now, the clinic is closed at night. So the halacha is that the Mishnah already brings that generally we don't have tashmish by daytime. I'm sure you're familiar with that halacha in Siman Reish Mem, that we don't want a person to have tashmish by day, only at night. However, the Mishnah says that b'shas hadkak, a person can have tashmish by daytime and make the room very dark, a bias ofel, and this is a shas hadkak. This is what they need to do. Now, to avoid traffic, a lot of times, they're going to have to set an alarm clock and wake up very early in the morning. And people have told me that it doesn't work because, you know, it's not natural. It's not romantic. And, you know, you set the alarm for 5:30 in the morning and they're still tired and it doesn't work sometimes. But if they're able to make it work, this is the best way in halacha. We tell the husband not to go so deep inside, maybe perhaps just the tip. This way, not a lot goes in, and they empty themselves out into a cup. This will be the best way in halacha. She stands up and empties herself out and brings it in, because they have to bring within the next hour, the doctors say, so they have it by daytime. That is the best way. You have a question?
Yeah, does some have to go in order for it to not be shivazel levatal?
Sorry, say that again?
the sum of the semen have to go into the woman in order for it to not be?
So in this case, all of it goes into the woman, but she quickly stands up and then empties herself out. It's like a two-step process. So unless your question was, does some have to remain in the woman? So the answer is no, that it doesn't need to remain in the woman. She could theoretically, she's not going to be able to, but she could theoretically empty all of it out and put it into a cup. There is a Rabbi Akiva Eiger that says that maybe this is also not allowed, that maybe she's also mechuyeves in etzah zera levatala on the man's part, but barring that Rabbi Akiva Eiger, everybody holds this is permitted because they're together, like regular, and then only afterwards she stands up and empties herself out. The second to best way, and this is where your question is so important, and that is a condom. Now, a condom, a person goes to the pharmacy and they buy a condom, so that has spermicide. So that, of course, you can't use a regular condom. It has to be a special type of condom. It's called, we don't like using the term a halachic condom because then it makes people think that, oh, sometimes a condom is okay in halacha. A condom is not okay in halacha, only in this case. It's a special type of condom. It's called the male factor pack, and it comes along with a cup. And the husband puts a condom on himself, and he's able to be together with his wife, and all of the zera goes into the condom. Why would he not do the first method? And that's the following. That many doctors, that they don't like the first method because the sperm, they claim, gets harmed inside the woman. It goes inside her body, and it touches the inside of the canal and the walls, and they feel that it ruins the sperm. It harms the sperm. So then I'm asking, they don't agree. You can't do that method. You have to use a different method. Now, it's important to remember, in the Bayesha world, the way to do a semen analysis is so easy. It's so simple. You just simply, the man goes into the other room, they give him some magazines or some videos, and he does his thing in the other room. So we don't want to do that. According to Rav Moshe, that's completely off limits. So we have to do this method. So the best way, they say, no, you can't do that because it gets harmed inside the woman. So the second, the best way is a condom, and you empty the condom into a cup, or you just simply bring in the condom itself, and you have to be there again. The same idea within the hour. And this is the second best because it is a little bit natural. The husband goes inside his wife, and he's mitzi zera like regular, but there's a chatzitza, there's a hefzik, there's an interruption of the condom. Some of you might have heard of the halacha from Rav Shlomo Zalman Erbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman says that you should make a little hole at the tip of the condom. Make a tiny, tiny hole. And that's exactly because of your question, Moshe, before, because then at least a little bit goes inside the woman, and that makes it more permitted. Now, it's important to remember that even Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's brought in the Nishmas Avraham, you could look it up, even Rav Shlomo Zalman, he doesn't say that you must make a hole. He says it would be better if you could make a hole at the tip of the condom because then at least a little bit goes inside. So since Rav Shlomo Zalman says that you don't have to do that, so you have to know that sometimes it's not a good idea to make the hole. Number one, the tip of the needle that you make the hole has to be sterile. That's number one. And number two is that I've spoken to people, and Rabbi Siegelman told me he spoke to people also, that you make the tiny hole, and then the whole condom gets totally ripped and torn, and you make too big of a hole, and it's a disaster because the clinic is expecting you to show up with the sample that morning. You try it, and boom, the condom gets totally torn and ripped. Let's not forget, this is a frum guy who's not used to condoms, and he's not accustomed to these things, and it's not comfortable, and he makes the hole, and the hole gets ruined. A lot of times, we tell them, don't make the hole. Don't make the hole. Just use the condom. You're allowed to rely on that in halacha, and that is the second method. You'll see. Yeah, you have another question?
If you're not making the hole, then why is it different than, I mean, what's the upside of this condom halachically?
Because at least the husband is inside the woman. It's not like he goes into a bedroom, he goes into a side room and just does it by himself into a cup. At least he's inside his wife, and they're together in a maisa tashmish, but there's a chatzitza, okay? So there is pleasure on on her end as well. It's a nice attachment, but it's not the best. It's not the best as if it will be without a condom. You'll see.
But how is it different than any other condom?
No, it will be the same as another condom. Just a regular condom has spermicide. A regular condom has spermicide, so that's why you wouldn't use it. But certainly, in halacha, we would never let the couple, we don't want to get pregnant. Okay, fine, so go use a condom. We would never let such a thing as chatzitza. But we're here that they need to take a semen analysis, so this would be the second best. Yosef?
Yeah, so I'm curious. I haven't heard it suggested. I'm curious why it doesn't work. I know there's a sheet down in Ramah that says that, the Shara Ivarim is much or even Shepazera. You don't do this in Tila, but why wouldn't you better if the wife?
Fantastic. So that really is the third option. And tell me if this is what you were referring to. It's similar to your question. The third option, if let's say the condom doesn't work, let's say they tried the condom already. And like, it was a disaster. I've had men tell me that they put on the condom and they were so uncomfortable because, again, we're talking about a firm individual that not used to using condom. Nothing happened. It couldn't work. So the third option is what's called Dosh mi bafnim v'zoyra mi bachutz. And that was the Avera of Erva Oyman. And it's not something we would allow, but in this situation, we would allow. What that means is the following, that the husband is inside his wife, completely, no condom, regular inside his wife, and right before he's moitzi zera, right before he ejaculates, he pulls out and he's zera into the cup. He ejaculates into the cup. So it's almost like, I don't know, a little bit of a compromise between the first method and the second method. But here, there's no chatzitza, but he pulls out and he's moitzi, but when he's moitzi the zera, he's not inside his wife. So you can see there's an advantage over the condom and there's a disadvantage. Some place can even feel that this method is even better than the condom because there's no chatzitza. I would rate this third, but at least he empties himself out into the cup. Your question, Yosef, was similar to be the other Ivarim, which means that he stimulates himself against other parts of his wife, other body parts of his wife, but that's not as good as this method. This method, at least he was inside a regular Maisa Tashmish, but then last moment, he pulls himself out. So that is a third option. Maybe what you would say, your example of other Ivarim is, let's say, the fourth option, because it's not inside the woman, but at least maybe there's other body parts that he could stimulate himself with. I'll tell you, a couple of days ago, what's today? Today's Monday. So maybe it was Thursday or Friday, I was on the phone with a woman, and I told her about the vaginal collection. The first method, she said, nah, that's not going to work. My doctor doesn't let that. So I told her about the condom. She was like, nah, I don't like that, whatever. You know, she wasn't 100% from. She said she's close to Orthodox. So, you know, you have to know who you're dealing with. So then I told her about the Dosh mi bafnim, Zeri mi bachutz method. She's like, yeah, I like that one. Yeah, that's good. You know, so it was like a funny conversation. But so that she was comfortable with. Okay, so there are paiskim that say that that's even better than the condom method. So that's a third option. And yes, exactly like you said, that might be a fourth method. We'll see the Reb Chaim Moizer. Klola shel davar, sheis lutz meichal das, shas tshuvas yayvitz, Reb Yaakov Emden, teicha diev shep grama, lasas gam biyadayim, we'll get to that in a moment. Derech ashmish ayidei nartik, nartik of course is a condom, vavadai mutter lukulial. That's mutter according to everybody. Now, as Moshe, you pointed out before, it doesn't mean mutter l'kuli alma stam for no reason, just because you don't want to have a child. In this situation, we would let this l'kuli alma. But look at Reb Chaim Moizer. Very important line from Reb Chaim Moizer. He says that you're allowed to do it biyadayim. He says that if it's e'efsher begrama, which we'll get to that method in a moment, there are times where Reb Chaim Moizer lets to do it biyadayim. Again, not to let them look at magazines or anything like that or bad pictures, but he could do it biyadayim. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't let, and Rav Liashev doesn't let. But Rav Chaim Moizer lets it, you know, when there's really no choice. Rafal, you have a question? Yeah.
Rav Chaim Moizer lived the early 20th century. What context was he talking about?
He was talking about this. He was talking about not necessarily to use it for an IVF. IVF didn't exist back then. But to check it out, to check the sperm, to see is it healthy or not. And And maybe even to see like the Gemara and Yevamos over there, that example, the person has a hole in the atara or in the testicle, is it going to come out? So how do you make it come out? So at least to test, like the Gemara's example, Reb Chaim is even led via dying. So at least like the Gemara's case. What was with Rav Moshe Feinstein's raya from the Gemara? Why didn't the Gemara just say to do it be a dayim? And the answer has to be, I thought of this answer and I discussed this with Rav David Cohn from Flatbush and he agreed with me, Baruch Hashem. And then later I saw that Rav Thomas Zalman says this answer. What's with the Gemara? So the answer is, the Gemara agrees that you could do it be a dayim. Again, if you would disagree with Rav Moshe and Rav Yashin, just the Gemara wanted to find a better option. The Gemara felt that the barley bread is an option. If the barley bread is not an option, let's say, I don't know, you try the barley bread and it doesn't work. So then maybe the Gemara would agree that Biadayim is okay. Okay, Rav Moshe feels that it's not okay. But it's important to know sometimes, again, yeah, a person needs to weigh every situation. That perhaps, Biadayim would be permitted. You'll see there's something that's called a vibrator. We call it a PVS. A lot of times, unfortunately, this will be relevant by a Bachar. Someone that's not married, so why is he doing the semen analysis? How in the world does he even know that he doesn't have good sperm? So sometimes it could happen, you know, he went to the doctor and the doctor saw that, let's say, his Batesim, his testicles are very small. So the doctor says, listen, you know, this is very serious and I think you should really get this checked out. Or let's say I had the situation where a boy was about to start chemotherapy and he had to do fertility preservation. He's a bachar. How's he supposed to be mitzi zera? It's not good for a bachar, you know, to be mitzi zera biadayim. You don't want him to start getting into the habit, and you know, it's not good. It's not good for a bachar, you know, to be mitzi zera biadayim, and he doesn't have a woman, he doesn't have a wife. Option number one, two, three, four, it all doesn't exist for him because he's not married. So then we have this method of what's called, that's what, you know, a grumma, to some type of PVS, a vibrator. Now there are vibrators for sale that the goyim use for their own disgusting pleasure. That's not what we're referring to. We're referring to like a medical type of vibrator that they put it on that aver and it stimulates in that method, and they're able to be mitizera in that way without you know, having improper thoughts. I had a boy a few months ago and never had to do this, and I Ubered the vibrator to the family. And, you know, or maybe to the hospital, I don't remember. And I Ubered it there and, you know, took care of it. And they picked it up in this bag. And it was like, oh, mama, she was starting chemo within the next couple of days. And she told me that they got two vials of sperm, of semen. And Baruch Hashem, you know, Mitzvah Hashem, this boy should find the chedach and he should be able to use it and have children. That is another option. Rabbi Asher Weiss said that only Mishugoyim use this option. Now, again, not for a bachur, I'm talking about for married people. So, you know, if it's not possible, you know, it's a vibrator. He didn't say me to go in by the vibrator. He said it by another option, which is what's called, they give like a shock to the person, you know, in the back. It's in that area. It's like an electric shock that makes it come out. That's like a real procedure that we wouldn't recommend, but that is, I think, like the most important of the methods how to do a semen analysis. But again, the best way is a vaginal collection, and it's important. And when it's just a simple semen analysis, we'll just end off with one last thing that's very important. A simple semen analysis, because hey, not having kids after a year, you know what? Let's check it out. There's really no reason not to do the best method. You check it out. If the numbers are not good, and say, oh, maybe it was harmed inside the woman. Good. So then you go to a different method of the condom that it doesn't enter inside the woman directly. But if it's just a simple semen analysis, there really should be, you know, you could do the regular vaginal collection. If it's going to be used for an actual IUI, so then you'll find the doctor say, listen, this is gold. We're using this for the actual IUI. You can't take a chance and you can't do it inside your wife and then use the vaginal collection. You have to use a condom, or, you know, you have to use one of the other methods. Okay, so every situation is different. You know, some doctors feel, some rabbanim feel, nothing's going to get harmed, nothing's going to happen. And even for an IUI, even for an IVF, you have to do the vaginal collection. There's no reason to compromise. And good, yesh v'yesh, you have to make sure that the doctor has, you know, gives the thumbs up to the method that, you know, you're proposing to to the individual. Good. Next, so that was as far as how to do semen analysis. Number four is psua daka and the krut shofcha. Now, you're familiar with these terms. It's psukim in parshas kisete, that layova psua daka or krut shofcha kahal Hashem. And chas v'shalom, something happens to an individual, they can't marry into, they can't marry a Jewish girl if they have the status of a psua daka and a krut shofcha. And the question is, and you know, a lot of times there are certain procedures that take place that we spoke about. We spoke about before, the tefna, the tesi, the microtesi, and there are those that feel that those are problematic. And if unfortunately a person needs to have one of those procedures for whatever reason, that's it. They can't marry. They can't be married to a Jewish woman. It's a big, big sugya, obviously. But the accepted psak is like Rav Moshe Feinstein and others, that that's not considered ashrasa, because it was done with shem refua. It was done for a medical purpose, and many times it closes up right away. The Chazon Ish says that, and others. But a lot of these methods, you know, we saw the pictures before, that they take a small piece, but that closes up by itself. And if it heals and it closes up by itself, so then that's okay. Once it heals, then it's not a problem. And even before it heals, it's not a problem, because it's oimid to heal. Moshe Feinstein says that the whole problem with a psua daka and a krut shofcha is that they can't have kids. So these people, they could still have kids. They take a little bit of a piece of the testicle or the scrotum. They could still have children. They could still be mylit, and therefore they're not considered a psua daka and a krut shofcha. But these are big, big sugyas that the person needs to be aware of, that it's a child. It's a question of psua daka and krut shofcha. Next, a sperm donor. The sperm donor is probably the most heated discussion when it comes to male fertility. And that is the following. You might be familiar with a major, major, major machlokes between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Satmar Rebbe. Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that sperm donor, just to make sure you know, what is a sperm donor? Let's say an individual has no sperm. They check it out, zero. He's got no sperm, unfortunately. Maybe he has Klinefelters, like we discussed before, but unfortunately he has no sperm whatsoever. So he wants to use sperm from another man and use it together with his wife's eggs. Is that allowed or is that not allowed? Now we realize, the husband won't be the father. It's not his sperm. But there's nothing he could do. It's unfortunate. He doesn't have any sperm. Is that permitted? Is the child considered a mamzer? Right? Let's not forget, this woman is married and she's taking another man's sperm, using it with her eggs. Is that considered a mamzer or not? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein that that's allowed. What's Rav Moshe Feinstein's proof? He has several tshuvas on this. Rav Moshe Feinstein says the following proof. His raya is from Rabbeinu Peretz. You listen carefully and you'll be able to understand Rav Moshe Feinstein's proof that this is allowed. Rabbeinu Peretz was talking about the following case. Rabbeinu Peretz says that a woman should not lay down, should not go to sleep on a bed, on sheets that another man slept on, a man that's not her husband, slept on these sheets, and she comes and she sleeps the next day. She sleeps on those sheets. She should not do that. Why? Says Rabbeinu Peretz, because maybe the first man that wasn't her husband was Meitzi Zera. The Zera will go into her, and then she's going to get pregnant, and she's going to have a child from this random man. And then what's the problem? So says Rabbeinu Peretz, I'll tell you the problem with that. The problem is that this child is her child. Maybe this child is going to get married. And is going to get married to who? To this man's child. She doesn't realize that this child is a brother or a sister to this other man. She thinks it's from her husband. So it's going to be Shema Yisa Ach Es Achoisai. Maybe this child is going to marry this other man that slept there yesterday, their child, and then a brother is going to be marrying a sister. Everybody understood? So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, wait a second. I have a much bigger problem. The child is a mamzer. you shouldn't sleep on the bed because maybe you're going to get pregnant. And then what's the problem? The child is a mamzer because she's married to another man. And this child is a mamzer. The zera came from another man. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, now we see that that's not considered a mamzer. Otherwise, Rabbeinu Peretz did not need the goat star. Oh, Shema Yisa Achas Achise. You see that that child is not considered a mamzer. And Rav Moshe Feinstein held like this. The Satmar Rebbe disagreed very, very strongly. The Satmar Rebbe held that this child is considered a mamzer. And there were people, there were Satmar Chasidim that gave Rav Moshe a very hard time. They threw bricks through his window. They screamed at him and they published things against him and they bothered him and they came to his house and they, and Rav David Feinstein, Rav Reuven Feinstein told us, me and Rabbi Siegelman, they told us that it was a very hard time in Rav Moshe Feinstein's life. Rav Moshe did not back down. Rav Moshe felt that it was permitted for a couple that didn't have sperm. It was permitted. And this is a very, very big question. Can a couple use a sperm donor? It's important for you to know that Rav Schechter and Rabbi Willig, they tell couples that they could rely on the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. We've had couples from Washington Heights that unfortunately are not, that, you know, there's problems with the sperm and they want to know, can they do sperm donation? And we tell them that they could rely on Rav Schechter and Rav Willig because that's their Rebbeim, and they paskin that they could rely on Rav Moshe. There are other Rabbanim out there that are not so confident, even if they're not Satmar Chasidim, but they're not so confident that they could rely on Rav Moshe. Many paskin disagreed with Rav Moshe. This is a major, major question, and it's something that you can't paskin, you know, in a shir. You can't just paskin over the phone. It's something that needs to be dealt with, but it's something that needs to be brought up with a couple. If a couple has a situation where they're not able to, you know, produce sperm, so sperm donor is a question that a lot of times someone is going to have to address. But again, the Satmar Rebbe feels that it's the child would be a mamzer, even though it wasn't done through a nice attachment. It was just done through IVF. But that's a question. It's a question that that could certainly come up. Yeah, you have a question?
Where's the donor going to come from usually then if it's going to be a Jewish couple?
So that's a good question. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that the only way he would permit a sperm donor is if the donor is a goy. Over here, we bedafka want the donor to be not Jewish. Now, Rabbi Siegelman might have addressed to you about an egg donor. By an egg donor, I was on the phone today with a woman in regards to egg donation. We bedafka want an egg donor to be Jewish. Rabbi Siegelman told you about that. But over here, by sperm donor, we bedafka want the sperm donor to be a guy. Why do we want the sperm donor to be a guy? Very important, because a guy, the Gemara tells us that a guy has no yichus. They're not related to their child. I mean, they think they are, but they're really not related to their child. Over here, we don't want the donor to be related to this child. Now, again, the husband is also not related. That's unfortunate. He has no sperm. There's nothing we could do. But we don't want the husband. We don't want the donor to be related. So they have what's called sperm banks, and they have frozen sperm from random people, and you get a profile. And obviously, you're not going to choose a sperm donor that is Chinese if you're not Chinese. You're not going to choose a sperm donor that's African-American if you're not African-American. You're going to choose a donor that looks like you as much as possible. Sorry if you hear my kids in the background. A sperm donor as much as possible looks like you, and then you hope for the best. But that's really where you get them from. You get them just from any sperm bank. An egg donor is much more complicated. An egg donor, you got to make sure the child is Jewish, and you got to make sure that the donor is Jewish. Over here, just the opposite. You want specifically the donor to not be Jewish. That address your question? Yeah. Okay. Anybody else could just call out because I don't necessarily see all of you on the screen.
Yeah. Question. The egg donor can be a married Jewish woman.
So the egg donor, we want her to be Jewish, and we have to want her to be single, a single Jewish woman. The reason why we want her to be single is that it's going to be the husband's sperm, right? Let's say the egg donor, so the husband's sperm, it's fine. It's the woman that unfortunately doesn't have good eggs. So you're going to take his sperm and put it together with another woman's eggs. So according to the Satmar Rebbe, that's not allowed. And even though it's not a Maisa Bia, it's not a Maisa Tashmish, but if she's an Eish Azish, so the Samar Rebbe holds that that's a Mamzer. Even if you don't paskin like the Samar Rebbe, but it's better that she is single. This way, at least, she's not a Zaina, and she's single, she's not considered married. So if she's not married, this way, you don't have that problem of what's called an Eish Azish. But it's important to remember that a Jewish woman who is married to a guy is considered not married. In halacha, she's considered not married. So a lot of times you'll have an egg donor that's Jewish, but she's married. Oh, wait a second. She's married to a guy. She's not frum, and she's married to a guy. So then she's single. In halacha, she's considered single. It's not Typhus Kedushin. So she's single in those regards. So that's a big difference between an egg donor and a sperm donor. Okay. Last but not least is Shaduchim. And that's the following. There's a great question in regards to Shaduchim. As a Rav, you're going to be privy to certain information that other people don't know. And people will talk to you and they'll tell you their medical issues, and they might tell you that they have certain issues in fertility in regards to becoming pregnant or impregnating somebody else. And the question is, what do you say when it comes to Shaduchim? There's the issue of Lashon Hara. You're not allowed to say things that are negative about people. On the other hand, there is an important Aveira of what's called Lois Samayd Adam Reyecha. You're not allowed to stand on the blood of your friend, which basically means over here that if you know information about somebody and that information can be detrimental to somebody else, let's say you know somebody that's a crook, they're mamash a ganav, they're a thief, and someone said, oh, I'm going to go into a business deal with this guy. You know anything about him? And you know that he's a ganav. You have to tell them. Oh, but it's lashon hara. It's loisam adam reyecha. You're obligated to volunteer that information. You say, listen, you know, I know he seems like a nice guy, but I just know that he's not honest in business. I really think you should stay away. You shouldn't get involved with him, you know, in business. So you have to tell them. And so do when it comes to Shaduchim. If somebody has something that is very negative, the way the Chafetz Chaim says it is, you know, it's classified as what's called, very important, a chesaron and a chesaron atzum. Chesaron means something that's negative. Chesaron atzum means something that is terribly negative. And halacha is that something that's a chesaron atzum, something that for sure the other party would want to know about, that if they would know, if they would have known, they never would have wanted to get married. So then that you are obligated to tell them because of Laisam and Adam Reyecha, and you're obligated to volunteer that information. Last night I was on the phone with somebody. She knows somebody that Nebuch, she's depressed. She's depressed and she has eating disorders and she's on her friend's resume. Does she need to say that? And I told her, I said, you got to find out if it's up to date, because she knows her from seminary or from high school a few years ago. I said, but if the girl is still depressed and she's still seeing therapy and she's on medication and she has eating disorders, you have to tell people. If somebody calls, oh, you know anything about this girl, you have to say she's a wonderful girl, she's really sweet. You should just know that she's seeing a therapist for depression. So now you could tell her, take me off your resume. But that's something that's a chesaron atzum. And when it comes to fertility, a lot of times there's something that's a chesaron atzum. If you know that a man has no sperm and he's going to have to use a sperm donor one day, it's the only choice. So that's a chesaron atzum. It's not his fault. Doesn't mean he's a bad person. He might make a wonderful husband, but the girl has to know. The girl is entitled to know. And all the problems with the eggs and female infertility that you learned about with Rabbi Siegelman. So you have to know what's a chesaron atzum and what's a chesaron. Something that's a chesaron atzum, you have to give that information. You have to even volunteer that information. However, something that's a chesaron, not a chesaron atzum, but a chesaron, something, you know, the person gets migraine headaches. So it's not geschmack being married to somebody that gets migraine headaches. It's not terrible. It's not so terrible. It's a chesaron. So then you're not supposed to volunteer such information. But if the person asks, to say, listen, you know, my son, he needs the type of girl that never gets migraine headaches. Migraine headaches really annoys him. and he's looking for a girl that never gets migraine headaches. And lo and behold, you know that this girl does get migraine headaches. So they ask you, if they ask you about it, then you have to say. And of course, the question is, what's included in a chesaron otzum? What's included in a chesaron? So a million different situations. Let's say the person's an anti-vaxxer. Is that a chesaron? Is that a chesaron otzum? Let's say a person has a terrible temper. Is that a chesaron otzum? Let's say the person smokes. Is that a chesaron otzum? So you'll have unlimited number of questions. Is this considered a chesaron otzum? Is this considered a chesaron? And you got to be knowledgeable. Sometimes you have to be a doctor to know what's a chesaron otzum and what's a simple chesaron. When it comes to fertility, it's the same idea. Let's say a girl has PCOS. I'm sure Rabbi Siegelman discussed PCOS with you. PCOS, the place can tell us, is not a chesaron otzum. It's very possible for a girl that has PCOS to get pregnant naturally. Okay, maybe she needs to take a few pills, some hormones, but that's not a chesaron otzum, but it might be a chesaron. It might be a chesaron. So you got to know, is that a chesaron? Is that a chesaron otzum? And it depends if they ask. And what's also important is when. Do you say the information now or do you say it later? So the answer is, there's a big difference. If you're giving information about yourself, a girl knows that she's depressed or that she has PCOS or a boy knows that he smokes. So if you're saying it about yourself, you don't have to say it right away in the beginning. You're allowed to, you know, put your best foot forward and try to make a good impression. And then when it starts getting serious, then you have to give over that information when you're talking about yourself. How many dates is considered serious? It depends. For a Hasidic couple, after one or two dates, it's already getting serious. For other people, you know, five or six is serious. For other people, only on date number 9 or 10 is considered serious. So, but you say it when it starts getting serious. If you're saying about somebody else, so then a chesaron otzum, you got to say right away in the beginning. Right away in the beginning, because you have like Salman Adam Reyecho. I know somebody that Nebuch, he was bipolar. And he was a nice guy, but he was bipolar and he stopped taking his medication and he started abusing his wife. And no one ever told the wife. But being bipolar is a chesaron otzum. Doesn't mean the person can't get married. Doesn't mean a person can't be a wonderful husband and a wonderful father. That's something that it's genetic. The other side is entitled to know. That's all. They're entitled to know before they go ahead and make their decision. They might decide that they're willing to marry such a person. And that's fine. That's totally okay. But anything that's a chesaron otzum, a person is entitled to know. So we need to know in regards to fertility, what is considered a chesaron and what's considered a chesaron otzum. Now I realize someone that's a rav, someone that's a doctor, if they give over certain information, I'm sure you all have heard of what's called the HIPAA laws. So they could lose their license. They could lose their job. But wait a second. Leisam al adam reyecha. Are they obligated to give up their entire livelihood just because of one lav in the Torah of Leisam al adam reyecha? That's a tough question. The Paiskim discuss this. The Paiskim say that really they don't have to because it's like a Shabbos Aveda and your Aveda comes before other people's Aveda. It's a big shaila. It's a big shaila that a person needs to address. But that is really the last issue when it comes to fertility, is telling other people and sharing secrets when it comes to shidduchim. As you could see by all of the medical issues we discussed and all of the halacha issues we discussed, that it's just really the tip of the iceberg. And there's really a lot, the sugyas and a lot of the medicine. There's a lot more to discuss. Anybody who has any questions, you know, you could reach out. You could ask any more questions. I mean, it's still 6 minutes left to an hour and a half. You could reach out to me. This is my email address, rabbikrone@puafertility.org. Reach out to me. Reach out to Rabbi Siegelman. Or you could give us a call at Pua, you know, the Pua number to reach out to us when you're doing the sugyas or when it actually comes up, Nageya Halacha Lamaisa. And I wish you all a lot of atzlacha. These are, you know, situations we'd much rather not have to deal with. But unfortunately, these are things that come up. And Pua is here to help. We're here to help anybody, men, women, singles, married couples. And the Bez Hashem, we should be able to, you know, all help others and see Bar Yishar and Mavairach in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wish you all continued Hatzlacha together with Rabbi Orlean and your Smicha. Thank you.